Blog Talk Radio.
Stamkos went back that way. Glendening got to it. Chipped the pass. There's a race now. Glendening catching up to it. Glendening right in. Spinorama play. Back.
Oh.
And scores!
Oh wow.
There's a beautiful backhand goal from Luke Glendening. And it's a shorthanded goal. And the Red Wings have a two-goal lead.
Welcome back. The Detroit Sports Show has been away for several months now. I think our last broadcast was right before the Tigers took on the Orioles in the playoffs. But in the words of Frank Costanza, we're back and ready to get going again here. I am your host, Chris Burke. I got Andrew Tomlinson with me. I'll welcome him in a second. And Max Damara will be one of our co-hosts on a weekly basis. We're coming to you every week now. Every Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern time, you can find us here. We'll be rotating those host duties and bringing in some guests with us. But like I said, Andrew Tomlinson here, and welcome back.
It feels good to be back. It's been a long time since we've been on the air.
Yeah, too long. I think we all predicted the Tigers would beat the Orioles, and then the Orioles clobbered them, and so... Maybe it soured us. Maybe it sent us the wrong way.
I think it was just a dark time for us.
So anyway, happy to be here. We got Red Wings playoffs going on. The Tigers are 10-2. Max will be joining us in a few minutes. Got to talk to him from Comerica Park about the Tigers' hot start and a little bit about the Red Wings. We're going to jump right in here with the Red Wings because Tigers are 12 games into 162 Red Wings. Well, we had a podcast, I think, after two games last year, and they were split. They split the first two in Boston and then lost the next three. So we'll see what happens this year. Same situation with Tampa Bay. They did not play well in game one, but won game one, and then they played a lot better in game two and lost game two badly. So where are you at right now with this series?
I think everyone wants to make the comparison to last year, and I totally understand where it's coming from. You know, didn't play well, but won, and then lost in game two. I think the big difference is they played really well in game two. I actually was very impressed, and I'm starting to understand the advanced metrics a little bit more. And if you look at all of them, the Red Wings were the better team in terms of possession. They just didn't get the bounces. I mean, that's ultimately what happened, right? Tampa gets... I don't know how they get a power play in the first out of that scrum. They end up scoring. It's kind of a weird bounce. Mrazek probably should have had it. Didn't, you know, then you have the Tyler Johnson breakaway. Jimmy gave up a goal he shouldn't have. They played really well. They just didn't get the bounces. And to me, that's why I'm still sort of hopeful heading into game three.
Yeah, I mean, game two was really, you mentioned that early goal and, 3-4 minutes in, knew Tampa Bay was going to come with a pretty good effort, although they played really well in game one, and I'm sure felt like they got the short end of the stick there.
For seven power plays, I don't know how, but...
45-16, yeah, I mean, they did have all those power plays, but cashed in on the early one, got the Wings in a hole. Into the second period, the Wings had several chances to tie or get back into that game, including on the power play, and just could not find the back of the net. So, I mean, they get one late in the game. Didn't really matter that much. They had to scratch and claw their way to three in the opener. We'll get to the defense and all that later in the show, but are you worried about the offense at all right now?
I'm a little bit, but with Advocator back, I think it's going to be better. I mean, clearly Babcock decided to load up to have one scoring line, have another sort of, I want to say a neutral zone line and a Shane line, and then just to – throwaway checking lines on the bottom, although the Ferraro line actually played pretty well. I think what people forgot coming into this series is Tampa Bay is an amazing home team, and they are an awful road team. So I think that's going to be what could define the series, and this was really important, is the Wings got one on the road or at Tampa, and Tampa is so bad on the road, it could be the turning factor in the series. Tampa might not win a game on the road. That's something I can totally see.
I mean, you hope so. Though at the same point, the Wings were not great at home, especially down the stretch when they were trying to make that playoff push. They struggled. It's been sort of an odd spot for them because at times they'll be unstoppable at home, and then they'll go through stretches like they did late this year where they struggled. They lost both those games to Boston last year. But we've also seen them, I mean, thinking back to past playoff seasons, when they've really gotten going, Joe Louis has been as tough a place to play really as any place in the league. And even thinking back to, that seven-game series against San Jose that they lost but came back from 3-0 to force game seven. I mean, I don't know that Detroit's had a better home ice advantage ever than those couple home games late in that series. So we know it can get going. We know I'm sure the crowd will be excited after how quickly last season's playoff ended. But, I don't know. I don't know really what to expect anymore in this series. And that's sort of been – it's been different. For so many years, the Wings went into the playoffs as favorites, and now we seem to be talking about these same things every year. You know, can they bounce back? Can they – match up on skates with the team that they're playing against? You know, do they have enough speed? Do they have enough strength? And it's really a different mentality that's been going on the last 3-4 years. But I'm with you. I still feel better about this team and where they're at than certainly that series against Boston. But even how this team looked in February and March, I mean, I think that they're better than we saw. I just don't know that it's going to show in time.
What I think is interesting is we're looking at it from the Detroit perspective, right? We've been in the playoffs for 24 years, but the last, five, I would say, it's been kind of touch and go on really whether or not we think this team is good or not. But if you think about the other games that are going on, you had the Islanders and Caps knotted up at 1-1. I really don't think the Islanders were sitting going home thinking, oh, are we going to win another one? I think you look at some of the other West series, Calgary and Vancouver. I don't think Calgary was exactly upset about being tied 1-1 going back to Calgary. So I think, and it's certainly the Penguins are ecstatic to get out of New York with a split. I think maybe the Wings getting a split is a bigger deal than what people are making it out to be. The Wings have not played their best hockey, but I mean, are you worried about the fact that Steven Stamkos has done nothing in this series so far? Because it terrifies me. He can get hot.
He can, but I mean, at the same time, I think that's – if you look for places where the Red Wings tend to be pretty good in the playoffs, because of the way that they can use – and especially now, as you said, now that Abdelkader's back and you can get the lines that you want, the way that they can use Datsyuk and Zetterberg – not just offensively, but defensively. And then you add in that line of, I guess, Glendening, Ferraro, Miller is a really good defensive line. I mean, I think that that's one of their edges. I mean, you know, you look at the shots on goal and all that, and the Wings sort of, they're certainly not the explosive teams of the late 90s, early 2000s, but they can still score goals. But I think that's their big edge in this series like this. When another team has a couple stars, they have a chance to take them away. And at the same time, I mean, that's what makes Tampa Bay is pretty deep. And I think we saw that last game, you know, they can get a lot of guys rolling. So the Wings have to find, you know, it's nice to shut down Stamkos. They've got to find some way to put the puck in the net. They've got to find some way to tilt the ice consistently back the other way. And I don't know. I mean, I think at the same time, the Tampa Bay's probably sitting there thinking, well, I hope we can keep, you know, that Nyquist, Tatar, those guys from scoring, because the Wings haven't really, I mean, they got two from Datsyuk in the opener and the Glendening shorthanded goal. And then the Tatar late goal, you know, sort of the fluky goal last game. So it's not as if the Wings they're not a great offensive team, but we certainly haven't seen them crank it up on all cylinders either.
I think the best part about Abdigator coming back is now you have guys that crash the net on both of the top two lines. Before, when you had Nyquist, Cheyenne, and Tatar on the same line, Tass and Nyquist don't really crash the net that much. They're more perimeter shooters. They're more your three-point shooter, you would say, in the NBA, whereas a Helmet and Abdigator will go to the net. They'll create those rebounds. They'll hang around. And now that you have Helm back with Datsyuk and Tatar and Abdigator back with Zetterberg and Nyquist, you get that what they really need, which is that guy to get one of those juicy Ben Bishop rebounds and just bang it home. And they've got that now on both those lines. And that third line with Cheyenne, I don't love it, but you do have Yurko and Anderson who will drive the net, as will Cheyenne. So I really do wish that Timo Polkanen was playing. And talking about getting the offense started, it's a guy that will shoot from anywhere. And that's sort of what you need, and that's what the Wings haven't done in the first two games, I feel like, is there are a lot of times where they've passed up shots to try to make the perfect play. And I really wish Polkanen was in. I know Smith is in to get more offense, but I really wish Polkanen, just from the sole fact that he'll fire that puck at the net, and you never know. He fires it so fast, it just might sneak in.
Especially on the power play. I think it's pretty clear they have to get that group going to win this series because they haven't gotten anything. Not only are they not scoring on the power play, they gave up the shorthanded goal. I mean, they're struggling to get into the zone and sustain pressure. They're really not generating many chances on the power play. And like you said, Paulkin is a guy who will rip it from wherever. And we've seen enough time, even in the first however many days we're in, 5 days into the playoffs now, probably 20% of the goals have come off broken plays. You know, you just get shot, it gets blocked, and the puck pops down in front of the net and gets poked in. And we've seen enough of those that I think – I'm actually surprised he's not playing. And I think it's probably because of defense. I mean, I assume they want to – you mentioned the Cheyenne line is pretty defensive-minded and the Glendenny line. So I think it's – I'm assuming that's why they don't want Paulkin in there. But if Tampa Bay were to steal Game 3, I wouldn't be surprised to see him – in the lineup for Game 4.
It might be a size thing, too, with Polkanen. That was always the big knock in this season, was he couldn't create space. Maybe that's what Babcock's worried about, but I thought he'd gotten better at it. They don't want to play the big, heavy-hitting body game. They did that last game, and they got burned. They need to play the speed game. That's how you can beat Tampa Bay. That defense, while great, is not exactly the strongest skating backwards.
True. And we'll get back, as I promised, we'll get back into that much more to talk about this Red Wings Lightning series in a few minutes. But first, we are going to switch gears here.
Tiger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fly ball left field, hit on the line, it's deep, and it's gone, a home run! Yoenis Cespedes, grand slam home run! Tigers take a 4-0 lead in the first.
Go get 'em!
Detroit Tigers! Go get 'em, Tigers!
Yeah. How about those Tigers? 10-2 to start the year and looking pretty good, even though Justin Verlander's been out, even though Victor Martinez has been banged up. So we'll go to talk about them for a few minutes. And to do that, to kick this off, we're going to bring in Max Damara. Talked with him a little earlier today. He's down at Comerica Park right now covering the Tigers-Yankees game. So we're going to let you hear Max's thoughts. He did give us a little bit on Red Wings Lightning, too, so bonus there. But let's fire that up, and then we'll swing back. Andrew and I will pick it up on the other side here.
And joined now on the Detroit Sports Show by Max Damara, who will be one of our regular co-hosts. And tonight, just calling in, he's covering that cool, blustery April series with the Tigers and Yankees down at Comerica Park. But Max, welcome back. Nice to be talking to you on here again.
It is to you. It's always nice to come back on the show and get it going again.
Yeah, it's been took a little Detroit Sports Show hiatus, as mentioned at the top, but back now on a weekly basis. And as I said, Max, who you can get on Twitter at SportsGuyTheMax, and find that Tigers coverage at Tigers101.com, and then also Lions coverage at the Sideline Report. And as I said, Max will be back with us on a regular basis as one of our co-hosts every Monday when we're here. Mondays at 7. So excited for that. But for now, Andrew and I have been talking up the Red Wings, and sort of an interesting series so far. The Wings got dominated in Game 1 and lost, and then played fairly well in Game 2 and got blown out. So do you have any expectations for Game 3 at this point? Can you expect anything, or just hoping for the best?
You know, I think that's what the Stanley Cup playoffs is all about. I mean, what's up is down, what's black is white. It's just crazy. One game, you know, the team that should win loses, and the team that should lose wins. It's just all up in the air. But one thing I really liked about both of the games in Tampa was how the Red Wings were kind of able to survive. They were able to survive, I thought, a lot of, you know, onslaughts. That game, the 5-1 game, could have been a lot worse than that, it seemed. And the game where the first game when they won 3-2, they probably should have lost, you know, 6 or 7-2 the way that they played. So, and the amount of shots they gave up. So I think
right.
The fact that they were able to survive kind of serves them well. But as I've been telling people, you know, remember last year, the Red Wings won that game in Boston right away and looked good. And they lose the second one. And I don't know that they looked as good in the second game last year as they did this year, so I think there's reason for hope there, especially reason for hope because the Abdelkader's coming back in the lineup. I think they could really use him along the boards. They've kind of had a hard time in those areas, and they've been being beaten back in a lot of plays and being outworked in their own zone for a lot of pucks. So I think Abdelkader's return will help. And I think, you know, I think they made the right move in getting Mrazek out of there in that game, not leaving him in to get any more of his confidence shattered. I think he'll be reasonably better in Detroit. I think they'll play better in Detroit. Don't forget, a couple weeks ago, they beat the Lightning 4-0 in Detroit. So certainly they're capable of winning. And I think it's going to be a great game. And I think the Red Wings are going to hold serve at home. I really do. I don't think they're as bad as they just were unlucky with a lot of rebounds and a lot of pucks that went right to players and went in the net. So I think look for them to rebound and play a much stronger game on Tuesday night.
Yeah, that Abdelkader return, big. And so we'll have more coverage of that next week. Hopefully either the Red Wings have moved on or that series is still going. You mentioned
yeah.
That Boston series was over by Game 5. So, but switching gears here to the Tigers, as I mentioned, you're down at Comerica Park, Tigers-Yankees, 1-4 on Monday night. I don't know that the Tigers could have asked for a much better start, especially considering Anibal Sanchez has been hammered twice. Are you surprised by how well they've played out of the gate here?
You know, to a degree, I am. Offensively, we knew that they were going to be a great team this year. I mean, with a healthy Cabrera, Martinez reasonably healthy. They got concerns about his knees that aren't going away. So watch for maybe something to happen with him here in the next week. But we knew top to bottom this roster was going to be great. Definitely surprised that Iglesias is hitting as well as he has. I mean, he's just been punching the ball everywhere throughout the infield. And Ghost, he started off well. And Davis and all these guys, they're really pitching in. But I think the way that the starting staff has really taken charge here has been so impressive. The Tigers 101 today, I had a story about just how impressive they've been over the last week, and especially the guys like Green and Simone, those two. Considering you didn't know what you were going to get from them in the beginning of the year, watching them go back-to-back in Pittsburgh, giving 2 8-inning performances with no runs and very few hits, that was impressive. And then, of course, Green, I mean, he gave up a run yesterday, on Sunday, I should say, but he hadn't given up one in nearly 25 innings of work, which it's just unheard of. And considering the fact that Verlander is still hurt, you don't know when you're going to see him again. And David Price has been good, you know, and they've had to put in Kyle Lobstein. I mean, I don't think you could have asked for a better start. 10-2, considering in the beginning of the year, you didn't know what you were going to get from Green. You didn't know what Simone was going to provide. And the fact that they've gotten off to such good starts is so encouraging. Especially the offense, too. I mean, when you add that all together, there's no reason that they that they shouldn't be the number one team in the league, and that's why they are right now. I think it's nice to see everybody kind of rolling along at once. And lost in all that is the fact that they haven't really had to use the bullpen as much lately, which is good news. They got him into the game on Saturday during a blowout to get him some work, but we haven't really seen much more than the closer in a close game, since there hasn't been any close games. The staff has just taken over. So I think it's been an ideal start for the Tigers, but they'll be put to the test here immediately because they're in a stretch now where they'll have 17 straight games until their next off day on May 4th. So really important for them to keep their heads above water right now.
Yeah, skipping straight to Soria has been a nice treat, especially with Joe Nathan on the disabled list. But you mentioned several guys. You know, Anthony Gose has been, I don't know that they can expect him to keep playing the way he has, but he's been a great table setter for him at the top of the lineup. Green and Alfredo Simon and Simone Simon, and that pitching staff have both stepped up. And I was there Sunday for both Green's pitching performance, which he really should have the scoreless streak still going. J.D. Martinez kind of screwed up a play in right field trying to make a catch with two outs. If he just keeps it in front of him, I think that streak's still alive. But Green, another brilliant show. And Yoenis Cespedes absolutely demolished a grand slam and then muscled one out through the wind a couple innings later, two home runs. And he's been – it looks like he's the type of bat the Tigers were missing in the middle of that order. So that's four guys that Dave Dombrowski added. I mean, I think so far you'd have to say he's 4-for-4 on those pickups, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, totally. And we kind of figured, at least I did, that Cespedes was going to have a big year this year because, like I said from the beginning, you get him around guys like Cabrera and Martinez, who you watch them in batting practice like I do on a regular basis. They're so professional, the way they go about their batting practice. You know, they don't always try to hit home runs like a lot of guys do. They're always looking to go opposite field, and they dedicate a certain amount of time every day in that batting cage to trying to go opposite field, trying to hit home runs, trying to, you know, poke through singles, and they do a lot of different things. And you just knew that you get a guy like Cespedes around that, who, you know, the question mark, if there's been many on him, has been his plate discipline. He, you know, looks like a changed man to me this year. I mean, his strikeouts are down. He's not really, you know, lunging at any balls, and he's really doing well. So, and I'm really impressed. I've been really impressed with Ghost. I think he, you know, we knew that he was going to be, like Dombrowski said, defense was always the key with him. They knew he could cover center field, and he's made some fine plays out there. But offensively, I mean, the fact that, you know, you get him in, if he punches a ball through one of those gaps, he can run forever because the guy's got so much speed. And that speed element has really helped the Tigers early this season, watching them a lot of their games. The fact that they're able to have guys like Davis and Gose on the bases, and especially when they're on the bases at the same time as they were Friday, it causes a lot of confusion for teams. All of a sudden, you know, an easy ground ball and maybe a tailor-made double play ball like Emilio Bonifacio had turns into an error, which could turn into a big inning. So, you know, they've made the right additions the last couple of years, I think, to change around their team after losing in that heartbreaking 2013 ALCS where they were so slow, so outmatched. And now I think you see, and even Cespedes has a lot of speed. I mean, he's the kind of guy that you get him on base and he can take a base or two. So they made the right move. Yeah, the defense. He's been great out there in the outfield too. So all these moves, I think, and especially the pitching ones, Dombrowski knew what he was getting with Green. He knew what he was getting with Simone. He knew those two were innings-eating type pitchers. And a lot of the fans might not have known that right away, but in watching Green in two starts last year against Detroit, I was at the one where he dominated them start to finish with the Yankees. And I remember thinking, that kid is a really good pitcher. And, you know, you watch him this year, and he looks like, to me, he's always kind of looked like Doug Fister because he's tall and he works around the strike zone, he pitches to contact, and there's no reason he can't turn into that for the Tigers because I think he's been superb early on.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're not expecting him to run the table with a sub-1 ERA, but it certainly looks pretty good.
Yep.
I mean, you mentioned, too, the other aspect of the starting pitching staff right now, Justin Verlander had a shorter sort of simulated game outing than they expected, hasn't been able to pitch since then. They kind of shut him down again. I mean, they've survived so far. they need him back, I think, even if Green and you know, you continue to get these contributions from other guys. But are you counting on Verlander to come back? I mean, what should the Tigers fans be thinking about this situation here?
Well, I think they need to be as cautious as with him early in the season as they possibly can be. You know, we've seen him before last year and last couple of years when he's been hurt. He's tried to come back too soon, and that leads to worse things and wears down in the middle of the season. So the more cautious they can be with him now, the better. And I, that's what I like about their approach with him this year. They're not forcing him to do too much with these simulated games. You know, if he's tired, he stops. They're not necessarily forcing him into a rehab start in Toledo or something like that. And it's good. It's good. They don't want to overwork him. They just give him time to reset and kind of relax. Like you said, you don't want to depend on a Kyle Lobstein because he's not going to go all the way, and he's not going to be – he's a good player, but he's not going to be capable of, you know, filling that void the entire year seamlessly. So the hope is that you get Verlander back. But if you don't see him the rest of April, that's not a terrible thing for my estimation because, you know, they need him to be back. They need him to be strong and healthy. And it's the same thing with Victor Martinez. If his knee isn't feeling good this week, you know, there's no reason the Tigers shouldn't give him a couple days or shut him down for a week, something of that nature, because we saw that offense can be just as lethal as Cespedes in the DH slot. So I think they've got a lot. They've got enough pitching right now to get by, and they've got enough offense right now to get by. And it's kind of helping them deal with those two situations with Verlander and Martinez, where they can be a little cautious with them. Because those two guys, like you said, they're key, especially Verlander, because you're going to need another horse in that rotation. You know, considering what happened to Sanchez his last couple days, a couple games, you don't know what you're going to get out of him on a consistent basis. Obviously, it's going to be a lot better than he showed the last two games, but and they're not really worried about him. Austin has commented about that all day, that, you know, he wasn't worried about his velocity or anything of that nature. But you're going to need another horse to go with David Price. So Verlander's key. They've got to get him back. But the more rest they give him, I think the better it'll be down the stretch this year for the Tigers.
All right. Well, Max, we appreciate the time. We look forward to having you back next week as jumping in here with Andrew and myself. And stay warm down there at Comerica Park. Enjoy the games.
Well, thank you. I definitely will. And everybody out there, I'll be covering the Tigers, so check out Tigers 101. And I'll keep you updated on everything that's going on down there at Comerica Park and beyond.
All right. Well, thanks again to Max for hopping on with us. I know he's busy tonight, but want to get his thoughts and promise we'll get back to the Red Wings. But before we do, sticking with the Tigers for a few minutes here, one of the things that Max and I talked about, that Justin Verlander injury, it still sounds like they think they have a pretty decent handle on it, just something that needs to rest and heal. I mean, at what point do you start to panic about that injury, Andrew?
I mean, I'm starting to get a little worried now. It's never good when a pitcher has to go for an MRI. And he's essentially shut down, which, while yes, I think it's good, the later, you know, the more rest for Justin Verlander, the better. He's thrown a lot of the last 2 years. But you do start to get to a point where you kind of wonder, what am I going to get out of you for the rest of the year? Is this truly, what are they calling it, a tricep strain? Or what was it, a spasm to start?
Yeah.
I talked to someone who works in physical therapy and personal training, and he says if you could try to continue to throw on that kind of injury, you end up damaging the elbow. And I have to admit I'm a little worried right now. I don't know where you stand on this.
Yeah, I'm definitely worried. I mean, I think it's one of those things, especially, as you said, started off as a strain, you know, kind of day-to-day. Now we're on week, almost into week four of it. It doesn't sound like he's anywhere close to getting back in the rotation. I mean, he's got to try another simulated game at some point, maybe a rehab start. We're probably already talking mid-May before they get him back. And with Anibal Sanchez struggling, you know, Kyle Lobstein sort of, I mean, maybe he'll be a decent pitcher down the line. I think right now he's going to be kind of touch and go. So if you get any regression from Shane Green or Simon, puts you in a pretty tough spot. And that's even knowing that Verlander, I think the other thing is, knowing that Verlander struggled so much last year, you know, you talked about this, the need for him to have kind of a bounce back year this year. And this is a tough way to start it. I mean, you don't see a lot of pitchers necessarily miss a month or two and then step right in and dominate. So this is kind of a long-term problem for them and one that they might have to figure out a plan B if he can't get throwing again. You know, it's fine now as well. They're playing well. The pitching's been good. But the longer the season goes, the bigger an issue it becomes. And that sort of leads into the next question, which is about Victor Martinez. He's been in the lineup the last couple of days, but also not healthy. Had the knee issue, knee surgery this offseason, then re-injured the knee in kind of a different way recently. It seemed like maybe his back had been bothering him too. I mean, if you're close to panicking about Verlander, do you feel any better about Martinez right now?
I'm going to say this with both of them. Both of them are signed to such long-term deals that if, to finish on Verlander, if he needs something more, and no one wants to say it, but if Justin Verlander needs Tommy John surgery, you need him to get Tommy John surgery now because you want him back for next year because you just don't want to keep burning a wasted investment, essentially. It's the same idea with Victor Martinez. He's experiencing upper kneecap pain. I think you and I have both experienced the same pain. It's certainly not debilitating, but it's not fun. And you need, three more years after this one out of him? He needs to be shut down. He looks like he can barely swing and barely run. This team clearly doesn't need him right now to score. They're doing okay. I don't see any reason other than he just got his timing back and you don't want him to lose it again for Victor Martinez to keep playing like this. I just fear, you know, a mid-season ACL tear is disastrous because now you're probably not going to have him back next year either.
Yeah, this is certainly, as Max said with Verlander, this is certainly the time, if you're going to be cautious with a guy, you'd rather be cautious in April than, you know, August, September. I also assume that they're feeling okay about Martinez, that there's not a huge risk of re-injury, that it is just the soreness from suffering an injury. Like you said, I mean, I dislocated my kneecap and then had similar problems where other things start to hurt. And I think a lot of athletes would tell you the same thing. You hurt your knee and then you kind of overcompensate. And I think that's why you have seen when pitchers come back from, Derek Holland in Texas had the Tommy John or had the elbow injury and then now had shoulder back injury. I think that happens a lot, guys just sort of overcompensating. And so I guess the counter argument is that maybe by being in the lineup, he's working through some of that and strengthening the knee and sort of getting back to a point where he needs to be. And the rest might not help all that much. So, I mean, yeah, you kind of cross your fingers and just hope it doesn't get any worse. Because right now he's playing against left-handers, and then they seem kind of unsure about what they're going to do when a righty's on the mound, and that's not a great way to go through the season either.
Yeah, and I think too a little bit with Victor on the less cataclysmic side, I have a feeling he maybe came back a little bit too early from the knee, and when you do that, your knee's still tight, and so sometimes you're not used to twisting your knee and it just catches a little bit. And maybe that's what's happening with him. He's not hurt. It's just the knee is moving in a way that it hasn't moved in a couple weeks, couple months. And so he's worried about it. And so he twists it. It doesn't hurt, but it feels different. And that's why he's limping. And that could very well be what's happening. And in your case, I mean, a lot of times with knee injuries, you continue to use them, continue to build your quads, and it gets better over time.
Yeah, well, the benefit they have for him, too, is that he's only DHing. So you have a built-in rest kind of every game for him. I mean, he's not playing the field, so you don't have to worry about him chasing fly balls or, you know, diving for throws at first. It's this is as low stress and atmosphere as he's going to get. But let's say this lingers. Let's say Verlander can't come back until May, and the bullpen, we start seeing the bullpen more, and they're still struggling. I mean, at what point do you kind of draw the line in the sand here and say, all right, this is where, if the Tigers still have a major issue with Verlander or Martinez or the bullpen or wherever else a major issue might pop up, you know, what's sort of your cutoff date for where they would have to start thinking about getting after some moves?
What date's the trade deadline? It's so hard. I mean, everybody's on a one-year deal, right? You have Nathan's on a one-year deal. Soria, Cespedes. I'm assuming J.D. Martinez, he's arbitration eligible. Avila's left on a one-year deal. I'm trying to think of who else. I mean, there's a bunch of guys, Simon. They're all on one-year deals. So if the team is bad, they have a great opportunity to restock the system by trading everybody. And I think that's what the Tigers need to hold out on. As negative as that feels, if they make moves too early and they aren't good, then they really limit themselves on what they're going to be able to get in the future for future assets, because they don't really have any prospects to deal. So I would wait. And if it looks like on the trade deadline that they're not going to be contenders, I say blow it up and come back next year. I mean, they're not re-signing Cespedes anyway. They're not re-signing Avila. I doubt they bring back Simon. So I would not add. I would be looking at, is this team for real, or can we get better next year by subtracting this year?
Well, let's say it goes the other. I mean, let's say they start even with all the potential issues. They're hot. They're in first place. But, I mean, they're still going to have to make you would think would have to make a move somewhere. I mean, that bullpen's still going to – you're not going to get eight innings from your starter all year. That bullpen's going to be an issue at some point. I don't know what they're going to do with Joe Nathan. I assume Soria will stay the closer, but who knows at this point. And then, I mean, they probably need another bat. They have guys in the minors that they could bring out, but there's going to be some issues that pop up. We knew the starting rotation wasn't that deep going in. It's already – you're already seeing the results of that with Verlander being on the shelf. So, I mean, right now they can get by, as we've been saying. I think if you get into May, June, and Martinez is sort of in and out of the lineup, and Justin Verlander is not back, I mean, I think then you have to look at maybe getting another starter. And I think the other thing is, at some point, if Martinez stays gimpy like this, you probably have to go get Tyler Collins out of the minors, right, to play against right-handers. I mean, you don't have playing Rajay and Ghost together and Cespedes at DH the way they did the other day. Rajay's terrible against right-handers in general, so I don't think that that's a great solution.
I think the real hope the Tigers have is that Moya starts hitting, and then you bring him up for a little bit of stint, and then he starts facing the right-handers, because then you move a guy like J.D. Martinez to the DH, and then you have Steven Moya playing the field, who's supposedly a better defender, marginally, from what I've heard. So I don't know if Collins is what the Tigers are hoping for more than Moya. I mean, who would you rather have up, Collins or Moya?
I mean, ideally, I think you'd want, like you said, you want Moya up. But Collins is, if you want just a little pop from a left-handed bat, I think, especially if you're just using him as a sort of fill-in DH for Martinez, I think that's not a terrible option. But hopefully it doesn't come to that. Hopefully Martinez stays healthy, Verlander gets healthy, and the Tigers can finally see what what they've got. But lots of time to go back to them, several months of the season. The Wings, as promised, go back to that series and pick up our discussion on that Wings-Lightning matchup, 1-1. Before we do that, I just want to mention quickly, I mentioned Max's Twitter handle, at SportsGuyTheMax. You can get Andrew at Drew, is it underscore Tomlinson? Drew underscore Tomlinson?
It is.
And I am at Chris Burk underscore SI. You can still find us for the time being at D-Town Sports Site on Twitter, although there may be some changes there. Teaser, spoiler. Just teaser. It wasn't a spoiler. I didn't give anything away. But back to the Wings series against the Lightning. 1-1, home for two in Detroit, Tuesday, Thursday, and then back to Tampa Bay for Game 5, and then, if necessary, Game 6 and 7 next week. Still not sure those are going to be necessary. We talked about the one lineup change, or at least Justin Abdelkader's addition back to the lineup. Brendan Smith will be joining him in the lineup. It sounds like, based off the practice line today, that Steven Weiss, Alexei Marchenko are the odd men out. Perhaps Jonathan Erickson could be out. He didn't practice, but he didn't practice before game two and played. Just want to get your thoughts on that. Those potential switches, you know, Advocator for Weiss and then Smith for whomever might be out of the lineup, whether it's Erickson, Marchenko, or someone else last minute.
We can only pray that it's Jonathan Erickson that's out of the lineup. He is a bum right now. I don't know how else to put it. I don't like pulling Marchenko out of the lineup. I think he's played okay. And the one goal that everyone's going to kill him on, he actually joins the back check and enters the defensive zone on the left-hand side, and if you're looking at the net. And Quincy Jones on the right-hand side. So as this is, I think, the fourth goal, Marchenko slides back out in front of Mrazek in the left, just to the right of the left-hand face-off dot. Quincy's all the way down in the corner checking somebody and leaves another guy wide open. So I don't really know how that's Marchenko's fault. And I honestly believe that's why he's out, is that solitary play. I thought Smith had played his last game in Detroit after the Montreal thing. He has a bit of a mouth that he seems to be running, and he's still running it today. He doesn't talk to Babcock. He doesn't know whether or not he's in. I mean, come on. You know whether or not you're in or you're not. And I don't like Smith being in. Advocator in for Weiss, I'm fine with it. I mean, Weiss is nice, but he doesn't really add much. I mean, are you confident in Smith? I don't know. Sure, he's got a good shot, but he never really scored like he was supposed to.
I don't know that you can be totally confident in him. I mean, I think the speed factor is important in this series. We've seen Tampa Bay kind of at times skate circles around the Red Wings, and Marchenko's fine in that aspect, but Smith gives you a little more speed, gives you a little bit of an opportunity to bump a defenseman up into the rush. Marchenko's more of a stay-at-home guy, and I guess by doing that, you're hoping that he can just get involved and play one of his better games where he gives you some offensive punch. He at least creates some opportunities on offense and isn't terrible on defense. I think that's really the hope. He's never going to be great on defense, so you need those other guys that are there to pick him up. It doesn't surprise me that he's back in. Had they won game two, I think you'd probably obviously stick with the status quo, but getting the loss, I think it's just natural to try and mix things up, figure out some changes and go from there. And so that one doesn't surprise me. And the Advocator for Weiss thing, yeah, I mean, Advocator's got to be in the lineup. That's a huge pickup for the Wings. I wasn't sure who was going to be out. Weiss makes sense because he doesn't really add anything for you as a penalty killer. Adds pretty minimal help on the power play, and he hasn't done a whole lot 5-on-5, so just naturally jumps out of the lineup. I mean, I think Yurko is probably the next in line if you're going to take someone out. But I don't know that they'll be that desperate to get Weiss back in again. The one lineup change that didn't happen is in goal, where it'll be Peter Mrazek again, even though he got pulled after two periods in game two. They went to Jimmy Howard, and Howard was shaky. I mean, he was okay, I guess, but shaky overall. And so it's still going to be Mrazek. I mean, do you see any way that this goes back to Howard for the starting job, or is this going to be Mrazek's series to win or lose?
I mean, Mrazek would have to fail pretty epically. He'd have to pull a Corey Crawford, essentially, I would think, for it to go to Howard. I mean, if Howard had come in and slammed the door on Tampa Bay, because Tatar scored his goal, and it was, 4-1, I think, and they still had, I think, 12 minutes left. So it's not like they were – I've seen larger collapses in the playoffs, so it's not like they were totally out of it. But he let in a terrible goal. I don't see any way it goes back to Mrazek. I think ultimately moving to next year, this is the way that the Red Wings want to go, or at least Babcock. I mean, I know there was a rumor that there's tension between Holland and Babcock because Mrazek is playing, but maybe one of those goals against Mrazek was his fault. I mean, what are you supposed to do when it's 2-on-1s most of the time going back the other way? I think he's played pretty well. I think he's if you really look at just his play, he's probably exceeded expectations. I mean, was this what you were expecting, or were you expecting to see a shakier Mrazek, a better Mrazek?
No, I mean, I think this is – I didn't expect him to play as well as he did. Game one was phenomenal. I mean, he was brilliant in game one. That they don't win that game without that effort. Howard, the way he's been going, I would have found it hard to believe Howard could have put up that sort of a game. It was just an incredible performance from Mrazek, and he looks fully confident. Even in giving up goals, he comes back and he looks like he can put it behind. I mean, that's the thing Mickey Redmond's talked about a couple times now in the last week or so, and did it in game one on the Fox Sports Detroit broadcast. Just he has that sort of swagger where he gets up a goal but doesn't look like it affects him. And that's something you need from a goalie in the playoffs, and I think he's got that confidence in himself. So he's also come back in the games he has been pulled, and it's happened, unfortunately, a few times this year because the Wings have had so many defensive lapses, and Mrazek has had some bad games too. He's come back and been strong in those games after that. So I think you have to expect that he'll play pretty well in game three. And yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think unless they get blown out, I think if they get smoked again in game three and he gets pulled, we'd see Howard in game four. But even if it's a close, low scoring loss, I think they're going to ride with Mrazek, because I don't know that they could feel that confident in Howard. I mean, if Howard was starting tomorrow, how much less confident in this game would you feel?
I would feel wildly less confident. I mean, Howard is not – I was at the game in Washington where he tore his groin, and I've never really been sadder other than the other game in Washington. I went to where Ty Konkin gave up like eight. But he just never has looked the same since coming back from that. I mean, I know he's playing with his groin wraps, but he just does – he looks slow. I don't know what – maybe he fell out of shape. He can't train the same way. I don't know what it is, but he looks slow. And – I mean, Howard's really never been a great playoff goalie, and there's some stat, and I'm going to butcher it, but this is as close as I can get it. It's like every time Mrazek's played in a series where he's either gotten lit up or gotten – I think it's when he's gotten pulled, he's come back and won the next game, and he's never lost a series. I know it is a different level of hockey, but that says something about the kind of player, that he's able to bounce back and – make himself play better the rest of the way. So I say you ride the series in Mrazek. You've already made your choice, because ultimately if they get smoked the next game, I really don't think they're coming back in the series. Maybe that's a negative way to look at it, but it's something like 68% of the teams that win game three when it's tied 1-1 go on to win the series. So what do you gain from putting Howard in net? You know what he is.
I think game three is, as it usually is, it's the swing game, but for a lot of reasons, starting with the goalie issue for Detroit, because if they have another game like, I mean, if this is a repeat of game two, then there's also, I mean, I agree. I don't think they come back from that, because I think you probably are looking at a goalie change. Howard, as you said, maybe he's not fully healthy yet. He was excellent at the start of the year. He was a huge reason that they got off to such a good start. Everyone was talking about him as a potential cup favorite. And then he got hurt, and whether it was just the break, he never got back into it mentally. He's not feeling fully comfortable in that groin. I mean, I don't know what it is, but he has not been the same guy. And I agree, he doesn't look like he's moving as quickly. And even when he's played well, I mean, that Montreal game late in the season, he was really strong for most of that game, and then gave up just an absolutely horrible goal in overtime. And that's the type of thing you just can't afford in the playoffs. And you kind of cross your fingers and hope Mrazek doesn't have the same issues. So I don't know. I feel the same way about this as I do the rest of the series. It's just such a crapshoot at this point, because you're thinking, well, in a best-case scenario, Mrazek plays like he did in game one for three, four, five more games, and they move on. But in the worst-case scenario, Tampa Bay solves him, and then you've got all sorts of issues.
Yeah, and I think the big thing for me with the Howard Mrazek thing is, if you look at the bad goals that Mrazek's given up, it's usually from him being overly aggressive, probably out of position, either too far out or too far into the net. It's those sort of technical things that can be adjusted even as a game moves on, because, I mean, the goalie coaches are right there. With Howard, and this may be a Gorn thing, he seems to consistently give up 8 million goals through the five hole. I don't know what it is, but everything low and in the middle seems to somehow sneak through. And in the playoffs, when guys are crashing the net hard and really, you know, working the puck, especially down low, if Howard doesn't have that lower body strength to sort of close it up and hold it in, I don't know how you trust him.
Well, I mean, I don't think they do trust him at this point. Otherwise, I think Babcock would have waited more than 3 minutes after game two to announce who his starting goalie was. And maybe he just has that much faith in Mrazek, but I think most of it is that he just doesn't feel comfortable going back to Howard. So, I mean, that puts him in a tough spot. And in a way, I think he probably – it would have been interesting to see what happened if Gustafsson was healthy. So I'm not sure what they would have done in this playoff series. Probably alternated back and forth, but I don't know. I mean, I really don't. I don't think that feel good enough to go to Howard.
What do you think this means for Howard moving forward? I mean, he's still got a long time on this contract, but he's still relatively cheap for a goalie that's had a lot of success, although the last couple of years has been hampered by injuries. There are a lot of teams looking for goalies in the offseason. Do you think he's back with the team next year, or do you think the Wings have to look to move him?
I honestly, I think some of it depends on how this season ends, how Mrazek plays. But, yeah, I mean, you mentioned he's under contract through the 2018-19 season and fairly affordable. So if you're a team looking for a goalie for the next several years that hasn't been able to find a guy, I think if we're talking about guys that could be traded this offseason, he's got to be right at the top of the list. It's if Mrazek finishes out the season strong, because I think eventually you're moving towards Mrazek being the starter here on a permanent basis anyway. The timeline's been accelerated, but I think that was the plan, to have Howard and Mrazek, and then eventually Mrazek and someone. And so I think it's possible, certainly, that they go back at the end of this year and try to move Howard and go forward with Mrazek and a veteran. I don't know that they could trust Gustafsson again, but signing someone like that could step in and play, you know, 20, 25 games and then just be your number two guy in the playoffs. And I think Howard could bring back a decent haul. I mean, we've seen some goalies get traded for pretty solid returns of late. What do you think? Do you think he's back?
I don't. From a confidence standpoint, I mean, how do you turn back to Howard at this point and say, forget about the postseason, you're now our guy? I mean, I covered the Caps for many years and watched them rotate through goalies, and it never worked. They did it with Jose Theodore, and he had his own issues, but he just was never the same, even in the regular season after that. And you look at a team like Edmonton that is about to get yet another center and have now three elite ones and probably five on the roster that would be top two anywhere. You know, maybe they're a fit. And I think a lot of it's tied to Babcock. I mean, ultimately, if Babcock leaves, you're sort of looking at a mini rebuild almost. I mean, we're all assuming it's going to be Blashill that comes up. But you probably open yourself up to maybe making a few moves, jettisoning a few players, maybe like a Smith or a Howard or, you know, even an Eric. Well, I think Erickson is a no move. But you have the ability to have a new coach come in and say what he wants his roster to look like. And if it's Babcock back, I think there's a chance that Howard is more likely to stay. It's a known commodity between the coach and goalie. But if he leaves, I think anything's on the table.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, again, I think a lot of it depends on what happens. If Mrazek takes him deep into the playoffs, I certainly don't see any way you go back to Howard next year. If they go out in five and Mrazek gets pulled twice, then there's a little more justification for having that competition next year and using Howard Mrazek as they had planned out all along. So, it's sort of a tough situation for Howard, and I kind of feel bad for him. I mean, he hasn't been great in the playoffs. I don't think that their failure to win a cup the last few years is on his shoulders, though.
No, I don't disagree with that. I think there's been a multitude of issues. I mean, ultimately, right, the Red Wings rebuilt on the fly and still made the playoffs is really what happened. I mean, you think back to that first year after Hossa, they barely scraped in. That was the year they had Miller and Eve. They picked all that up. I think Howard was starting then, and you know, they barely scraped in, and that was on the back of Jimmy Howard. But it is his injury concerns to me is why I would look at moving on from him, only because how do you trust a starter that can't really get you through? I mean, we're really looking at saying, can he get you through 60 games? And maybe that's what the Red Wings do next year. It's a 55, you know, 45 split with Howard and Mrazek, or Mrazek and Howard, between who's, you know, there's 1A, 1B, and then maybe you play matchups or something like that. I mean, I don't love that idea either, but, and then you sort of see what you have if they go to the playoffs next year.
All right, well, what's going to happen this series? It's 1-1. Mrazek's in net. Smith's in the lineup. Abdelkader's back. Red Wings stole home ice those first two games, as bad as they look, as bad as the score line, I guess, looked in game two. So give me your prediction for the next however many games this takes to finish up.
Well, in my bracket challenge, I picked the Lightning in six. The advanced metrics now show that the Red Wings have a 55% chance. They are 55% favored to move on right now because they took that first game on the road. It'll change based on how tomorrow happens. I'm going to say cautiously the Wings in seven. I think that they played well last game. They haven't played their best. We saw the best out of Tampa Bay, and they still didn't win. And I don't really trust Ben Bishop. I'm going to cautiously say Wings in seven, but they have to win the next game, and they have to figure it out sort of through all three zones. What about you?
I mean, I picked them in six, picked the Wings in six initially, so I guess I would stick with that for now. But I really think that not only do they need to win game three, I think they need to win game four. I think they need to win these next two and be up 3-1. Because I just don't know that they have – I mean, on the one hand, they have the experience to get through the series. We've seen them win big games in the past and win game sevens with a lot of these guys that are in this lineup. But at the same time, the way Tampa Bay played those first two games, I think that unless the Wings can get this flipped and can take it to Tampa Bay the way that the Lightning did, and I don't know that they're capable of doing that, I think they're going to wear down over a long series. And so I would not feel great about them coming back in the series. I would not feel great about them winning game seven on the road. I think they've got to – I'm going to stick with Wings in six, but I think they've got to be up 3-1. Otherwise I'd be open to changing my prediction.
I think, and then my final thought really on the whole thing is I think we'll really see, we'll know next game, now that they have two scoring lines to roll, I think we'll see whether or not they're going to be able to take it to Tampa. If they can't, I mean, we'll just know. They can't be a one-line team will not be Tampa Bay. I think we all know that. So if they can get two going, I think that it gives them a better shot.
Now, this is the matchup we both were rooting for better or worse, as the season ended. I wanted Tampa Bay for the Wings. I think you wanted Tampa Bay.
I did
not want them to play Montreal. So this was the one that I had my fingers crossed for, and I guess we'll see if I end up regretting that. But we'll find out. Anyway, so... Again, welcome back to the Detroit Sports Show, now coming to you every week, Mondays, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Either Andrew or Max will be hosting next week, but I'll be along as well. So we should have the full roster, and hopefully you can join us then and for every episode the rest of the way. Thanks for joining us tonight. If you've come back and found us again, we appreciate it, and we'll see you soon.